This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey there, this is Audrey Raj and you are listening to Failing Forward on Open for Business. On the show with me as usual, but this time joining me virtually is Renuka Sena, Chief Explorer at Proficio. And for the first time on the show, it's just you and me, Renu.
I know, but after such a long time, we've gotten used to that rhythm.
Yes. So we're obviously doing something different this time around as we wrap up the year that was 2020. So on the show today, we're going to be talking about how the pandemic shook some startups this year, especially those in the education sector, you know, for this episode specifically. And we're going to talk about the fails, the pivots, and the role EdTech will play in our lives, or the lives of our kids moving forward. So Reno, it wasn't just the schools and students that were affected by this COVID-19 pandemic and the ensuing lockdowns, but also the learning centers, the enrichment centers, the tuition centers, universities, the teachers, the parents, and of course, the kids.
You know, this sector, I think a lot of people think about it primarily as the schools, but you know, like you mentioned, there's just so many other players in this ecosystem that were actually also affected.
So what would you say was the crux of the problem here? Just not being able to do things face to face?
Well, in essence, you know, a lot of sectors that were affected, like retail and things like that, were always about whether or not they were essential services and whether or not they were a must-have or a nice-to-have. You know, that's kind of how people talked about what needed to be done. But I think with education sector, in my mind, it's an essential service. So it was, you know, when MCO first hit, it was down for a while. And many of the schools were then asked to quickly jump on board the sort of virtual learning bandwagon. You know, you have a lot of platforms like Google, like Microsoft Teams, like Zoom, and a lot of the public schools especially, they were all already on Google Meet because their Google Suites are given for free. But I think that even though the platforms were there, they were not fully utilized, you know, because it's a traditional industry. It relies heavily on, you know, physical contact and face-to-face.
And the fact of the matter is our education system is ripe for digitization or digitalization, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been apparent, I think, especially now. I mean, if you look with the lenses of 2020 and what's happened over this past few months, in what was happening in March is now very different. When schools close and people are told to actually get on board the digital bandwagon, it's much easier now. Having said that, you know, there are variations, of course, for the government schools. But I think in the beginning, apart from the fact that, you know, the teachers were not very familiar with virtual teaching tools, I think the biggest problem a lot of them had was actually the content was not ready for virtual learning, because there's, you know, a heavy reliance on textbooks and workbooks, and, you know, people give out worksheets and marking is done. None of that is done online. And, you know, I don't know about you, but for me and my kids, when the virtual learning first started, one of the biggest issues I had was not sufficient digital devices. You'd find that the teachers, there was a huge variation in the school in terms of some teachers, all they could manage to do was basically kind of photocopy and then scan what they had looked at in the physical book. And then you'd have the others who were, I suppose, the younger ones coming up with like online quizzes, doing presentations online. My kids, you know, over time, they actually learned how to do their own PowerPoint presentations on Google, and they were presenting this, and, you know, they learned it a lot faster than I did. But there was a huge variance. I heard from a lot of people that government schools were not coping as well because of the digital devices, the Wi-Fi issues. And, you know, not all kids actually joining, which is why, you know, there's an extended calendar year now in terms of for the government schools. They only finish mid-December, I think.
And then, of course, it also affected the child's experience, the child's learning experience, especially the younger kids who, I mean, in my opinion, I think would have found it difficult to focus on just staring at a screen for X amount of hours a day.
Yeah, and I think with the younger kids, those under seven, they couldn't actually have a full school day because it's just so difficult to, the teachers generally do a lot of different activities in school just to kind of keep their focus because, you know, their mind wanders, they wander themselves. So to sit down in front of a screen, even though they can see the teacher on the other side, it's not much that the teacher can do to actually hold their attention. And I think for younger kids, it's, you know, not even longer than, say, 10, 20 minutes sometimes.
And for the startups in the education sector, Reno, what was this experience like? And I know you have some case studies to share with us, right? Or some stories to share.
Yeah, some stories. You know how I like telling stories. So there's one particular startup that, you know, came to mind immediately when I was talking about the education sector. And they're called RECA, which is Recorded Q&A. And they exist to solve the problem of e-content and teachers who are not prepared. So essentially, you know, this startup, the founder, Mazlita, she actually had a previous startup, which was about an app for helping people learn Quran. It was a very interesting app because what it does is it allows you to record your reciting the Quran, and then someone else gets on the other side and they listen to see whether you're reciting it correctly. So you can just imagine that something like that has huge potential in terms of learning languages and all sorts of other things. But she wasn't actually able to pursue that in her previous startup. And this year, what happened was one of her colleagues from another startup, or a friend from another startup, they actually were called upon by Google to deploy like the Google Suite for 5.5 million accounts across Malaysia in all schools. And this was done like, I mean, this could have been a record in the world, I think, because it was done in 7 days. And MOE then proceeded to, you know, further ask Google whether or not there was a centralized platform that can be used to share teaching resources. And so, you know, the person who was actually deploying it, Sean, he contacted Mazlita and said, let's do something. And so they actually built Ruang Ilmu, which is what it's called, to deploy in February. So when it first deployed, you know, nothing really much happened because, you know, it was an MCO. Come March, it was amazing because it was panic stations, I think, across all schools. And the traction within a month grew like 300%. They now have 15,800 teachers that are sharing and consuming content on this platform. And, you know, it was actually a surprise to them because they didn't actually think that Asians would share content, you know, maybe because it's proprietary, they might be kiasu, but that was really proven wrong. So, you know, like I mentioned just now in terms of my kids' school, I think some of the younger teachers, you know, could come out with PowerPoint presentations and the links to videos and things like that. So when they developed that for a lesson, they actually shared it with other teachers so that they could be used, you know. And then there was a lot of discussion that was happening on this platform about how to improve, you know, sharing sort of problems they were having. So it's really quite amazing to see that the teachers jumped on board so quickly to actually kind of embrace this platform where they could share resources with each other.
Right. And what is RECA doing today? Because, you know, it's been about 8 months since that first version, right? 8-9 months. What is this new version of RECA looking like right now?
So after they did Ruang Ilmu, they were actually, MOE actually recommended them to UNICEF. And the United Nations are looking at deploying them in Sabah for marginalized communities and the undocumented students. So the platform now can be used to do teacher training as well as to connect with the students. But, you know, from a commercial perspective, apart from just the education sector, what they found interesting, and this is, you know, sort of accidental but near perfect timing for adoption of a platform like this, they're finding that, like, say, for example, one of their current customers is a unit trust agent. And she was afraid because she had no confidence that she could actually grow her business in this virtual world. But what Reka provided is that she could upload all of her training content when she got new agents on board. If she had agents that basically were moving up the ladder, she had content that she could put on board and they would book time on the platform. And she didn't have to do this over and over and over again each time it was a new agent because it was a centralized platform.
And is Reka also part of your CGP program at Proficio?
They were both, actually Reka is two founders, both from completely different startups and who are my alumni, but they've now come together to form Reka. And we actually selected them for Scale Up Malaysia's top 20 for our cohort two.
Right. Okay. Well, good on them. Reno, it's already time for us to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll have more case studies that focus on startups in EdTech with a slightly younger and older target audience. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Backing female ministers. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is Failing Forward with Audrey Raj. Chief Explorer at Proficio, Renuka Sena, is joining me via Zencaster this morning. And we are discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic shook the education sector this year and how some startups in EdTech failed forward and are thriving in this pandemic. So Renu, a lot of attention is focused on the young'uns, you know, those in primary and secondary school. But the tertiary sector was also severely affected by the lockdowns, you know, our MCO, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, although they, like, you know, you said these are older students, so they're much more used to using computers. Probably the university lecturers are also better equipped in that sense. But one of the things that, you know, a lot of people don't think about, and I think is very pertinent during the COVID, is that both startups, SMEs, as well as, you know, the corporate sector, they still look at recruiting interns. You know, some of them want the interns because they, you know, have retrenched staff, and so interns are kind of like a cheap available resource. And for SMEs and startups, they actually rely a lot on interns because, you know, they can't afford to actually hire full-timers, right? But how are these companies going to actually meet and recruit these interns? Because a lot of these events in terms of career fairs and stuff like that, again, were something that were being conducted very much in the physical world. So one of my CGP companies, essentially, prior to this COVID situation, they were running events. So they would run these connected campus tours for the corporates, and, you know, corporates and the brands would actually pay them so that they could run these events and recruit their interns. And they were really doing well. They were making like in the high six-figure annual revenues, and they had a whole host of events lined up with, you know, expected revenue for 2020. And then COVID hit, and literally within like 2 weeks, all of their contracts were like, you know, their brands were calling them and saying, oh, we've got to shut down. We don't know what's going to happen. So all budgets were literally put on hold, and they had overnight zero revenue. And they spent a lot of time in the CGP. They actually wanted to pull out of CGP because they said, we don't know what to do. You know, what's next for us? And I said, this is precisely the time where you should be with a coach to help you kind of move through these hurdles, so to speak. So they went and spoke to the universities and said, look, the platforms are there. Why don't we try and do webinars where we can invite the corporates to come and talk about their companies and who they were looking to recruit? We can even run virtual internship days. And they didn't have a platform, mind you. You know, they kind of pulled stuff together, talked to a developer, and they ran their first ever virtual internship day in July. And amazingly, they ran it with University of Malaya, where they had 2,200 students who participated and 200 SMEs. And, you know, they didn't even expect to do this, but they had 1,799 e-meets happening at the same time, Audrey.
I guess this also comes down to the fact that everyone was experiencing this issue at the same time, because the corporate, there was demand from the corporates, and there was, of course, a whole bunch of students who were looking for opportunities at the same time. So I guess all you needed was that platform to connect the two.
Absolutely. And, you know, that the ability for them to actually not just connect with each other, but have, you know, listings in terms of jobs that are available. The students would register and put up their CVs. There would be scheduling in terms of the e-meets for them to actually conduct these interviews online. Pretty amazing that, you know, everybody jumped on this bandwagon really quickly. To the extent that, you know, in the past 2 weeks ago, I think, they had the largest ever virtual career fair, where 24 universities actually participated, and then we had like 20,000 students who wanted to actually connect with the corporates and the SMEs.
Right. Steep learning curve, but looks like they made it work and they're doing well right now.
Yeah, and these guys also, I mean, from nearly closing down, they were also part of the top 20 that ScaleUp Malaysia selected.
Right. You also have another case study to share with us on uni students, right?
So this one is not so much the university students, and they call you Easy Uni. So basically, Easy Uni, they help universities recruit new students. So they're like a marketing agency, and they do a lot of things online. So, you know, you would have thought that a business that was already online, where their customers, which are the universities, were already used to doing things online, wouldn't be affected. But I think as soon as COVID hit, what they got was universities were cutting budgets because they didn't actually know when they would be able to reopen. The recruitment by universities, you know, both local as well as international universities, rely heavily on foreign students. That's where they make most of their money. And they weren't sure that, you know, this would be possible because, you know, students may not even be able to fly into universities. But I guess that was kind of early, the early panic, because you don't really know how long this COVID is going to last, what MCO is, the SOPs were not in place. But what they saw eventually as COVID, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say tapered off, but as people got more used to COVID and what to do and how to do it, they saw that the universities were pulling back budgets from the physical sort of billboards and out-of-home media and moving these budgets online. And what Easy Uni did was they actually developed this this virtual fair kind of platform. So very different from Gen Youth, which were basically just connecting people. What Easy Uni had with their Fairways platform was a SaaS model where anyone wanting to actually hold a virtual exhibition or a virtual career fair or a virtual open day orientation, they could actually do that in large scale. So we're looking at having physical booths where people could set up and, you know, in their booth, they could put up what they usually would do in a physical sense, but now doing it online. You know, I was talking to Edwin, who is the founder of Easy Uni, and he said that in the beginning, their business was down 60 to 70%. But within a six-month period, they're actually now back to 90% of their post-COVID revenue and profitable because, you know, they got to do a lot less in the physical world, so not as much expenses, so profitable. And their SaaS model actually saved them.
Right. Now, I did a quick check and Easy Uni has scaled beyond Malaysia, right?
Yes, actually, Easy Uni was like my season one back way back in 2011, and they've been around for more than 10 years already in 10 countries. And you know, looking at startups in this field, I think it's not just the early stage guys that can be affected. Even seasoned entrepreneurs who are in 10 countries that Easy Uni was, even they were really affected in the beginning of COVID.
Hmm. Now, we are going to have to wrap up in just a few, Renu, but before we go, we haven't really addressed the enrichment centers, right? Because I've got a kid at home who isn't really at the age to go to school just yet, but, you know, I'm looking to get her into kindy or preschool at some point. And this was supposed to be the year, and then COVID happened.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad we're talking about this because I think that not a lot of people think about it. The only reason I know more about it is because another one of my startups, A1, basically they're an edutech super app that kind of brings together B2C marketplaces for tuition centers and enrichment centers. And they also provide the back-end sort of management system for people to digitize their scheduling and booking and payment and things like that. And so their clientele is primarily tuition centers and kindergartens. And I think that the tuition centers and kindergartens, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit because similar to schools, they had issues of the content, etc. But they kind of, you know, were able to pivot in their own way and find a way to come back. But the ones that had real difficulty, I think, were those that were doing sports or dance classes or music. How do you even develop e-content? You know, and how do you have that personalized kind of group sessions or one-to-one sessions? You're talking about, you know, your daughter. My son basically, you know, had to stop football. And in the beginning, I actually thought that, you know, the football coach was really innovative because he said, okay, we can't do matches, obviously, but let's do foot skills. So he actually would do it on Zoom and ask the kids to kind of like turn their cameras towards the feet so that he could actually look at their foot skills in terms of, you know, all the dribbles and all of those other things that they were doing. And as much as that was innovative, but after a while, even my son, who is 11, he got bored, you know. And so parents kind of like, you know, stop these classes. And a lot, I think, of the enrichment centers, especially, you know, those to do with sports, a lot of them have had to, you know, literally look for alternative income streams and finding ways to actually make money, because I think parents were just not wanting to send their kids out more than they needed to. You know, but with A1, I think one of the amazing things that they did, I mean, they didn't have this platform themselves, so they kind of partnered with another startup that was providing these virtual whiteboards. And at that time, I think we didn't have, so like, I don't know if you've noticed or you use Google Meet, but Google Meet now has a inbuilt Jamboard where you can actually, you know, kind of put all of your post-it notes and different people can come in and you can have breakout classes and things like that, all which were not available in March and April. But this startup had this virtual whiteboard. And within, I think, 2 months of A1 kind of partnering with them and offering this virtual whiteboard to the tuition centers, I think parents were a bit panicky, as in the kids weren't really learning at school, so tuition was always something that, you know, they'd look for in terms of supplementing the understanding and stuff like that. And having the virtual whiteboard, you know, there were about a million minutes that were clocked in tuition time in 2 months. You know, I found that amazing.
Yeah, yeah, all because of a digital whiteboard.
Yep, all because of a digital whiteboard.
I've also realized that many startups that focus on this kind of education, you know, the more of the kinds that involve a lot of social interaction and play, and like you mentioned earlier, you know, things like dance and music, it's not really been easy for them to pivot, and they all won't be able to rely on something like a digital whiteboard, right, during this time?
No. I mean, I can't even imagine how to do it. I try to pride myself to think that I'm quite innovative, but even I couldn't think of anything they could do. And it's because it's kids. You know, I think that a lot of the yoga and, you know, those adult type classes could still carry on Zoom. But when it comes to kids, and the teacher's not kind of right in front of them, they lose focus irrespective of the age. What more in kindergartens, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But there have been some startups that have been really genius in the way that they've pivoted during this pandemic. And if you want to go check out how some of them have managed to power through this pandemic, you can go look for the Open for Business podcast titled Powering Through the Pandemic. And Renu, I'm sure that in our next episode, you know, to end the year, you will have more case studies discussing some interesting ways that startups have pivoted during this pandemic.
Yeah, I really think that a lot of times we tell stories about the startups and, you know, how they pivoted, but it's also important to talk about the particular industries and how as a whole they've been affected, you know. So I am looking forward to finding, you know, more stories that I can tell.
Right. And before I let you off the hook, Renu, how has Proficio been powering through this pandemic? You know, what have you guys been up to? I ask because, you know, you're so close to the startup community here and the scale-up community as well via Scale Up Malaysia. I was just wondering how it's been going for you guys.
So for us, you know, both Scale Up Malaysia as well as Proficio, I mean, we have completely almost 100% jumped onto this virtual bandwagon. So activities haven't really stopped. But, you know, because we're still doing coaching at the end of the day, I still see a lot of startups that have been very affected, and that affects me. So for Proficio, what I decided to do was to kind of end the year strong and to give a little bit more visibility to startups and products and services. We actually launched our CSR campaign, and it's on our website at the moment. It's called Kita Mall, as in Kita and a mall. And you can find a lot of startups there, including, like, you know, click buttons to their e-commerce sites and things like that on www.proficio.com /Kita Mall. And I really hope that, you know, not just the listeners, but we've encouraged our entire community and our ecosystem, you know, all our coaches and other startups to just go and buy from each other, because I think that the year has not been a great year. Let's at least end well in the spirit of Christmas that's coming up and this Kita Jaga Kita and all of that. Let's help each other is the intention of the Kita Mall.
Thanks for that, Renu. I've been speaking with Renuka Sena, Chief Explorer at Proficio. Now, if you missed out on any part of this show, the podcast of this interview will be up on our website, bfm.my, within the hour. You can also look for our podcast on the BFM app, on iTunes, and on Spotify. And Renu will be back again on the final Monday of December to cap off the year and share more of these case studies with us. But till then, Renu, you want to say a quick bye-bye before we sign off?
Thanks a lot, Audrey. Look forward to next month.
Right, looking forward to it as well. Thank you for listening to Failing Forward on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.